Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for being part of our program today. Both myself and my co-host, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you've got advisors you work with now or you're doing things on your own,
whether you're worth tens of millions of dollars or you're just starting out.
Yeah, we've got clients from the whole spectrum, tens of millions on down to...
just starting out.
I think we do, don't we?
Well, the people just starting out have a tendency to be the children of existing clients.
Ah, fair enough.
Okay. Right, so we don't work with, you know, the smallest accounts. We, on the radio show, we do.
Yes. We so like to. I mean,
The economics don't lead itself to help someone that is saving $300 a month towards their
retirement.
That's
correct. And they can't afford to spend a couple thousand dollars on a financial plan.
Yeah. So we get that, but that's why we do the radio show. So,
yes.
Starting out, longtime investor, whether you have questions on your 401ks or IRAs or do I pay off the mortgage or do I buy the latest, greatest thing that my neighbor's trying to sell me that looks like a life insurance policy, but he says it or she says it's not.
Your neighbor's not trying to sell you something.
Yes. But it happens. If you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-242-6766. And
that's
we'll get
right.
you on the air and part of the conversation where we do our best to help.
And we'll start off in Northern California with Mike. Mike, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hi, Mike.
So I'll just start right out. I have, I'm 50 years old and have no savings, but through inheritance, have ended up with two homes, free and clear. And I have a daughter starting college in September, and, we are going to sell one of the homes, and obviously it's not going to take all of that to put her to college, but I am curious what your recommendation is to do with the proceeds from that.
So tell us about the rest of your financial situation. Do you own a home that you did not inherit?
No.
And do you live in one of the two homes?
Yes.
Okay. And the home that is being sold, is it a current rental?
It was. The renters just moved out last week.
And when did you inherit it?
About 2013, the end of 2013, actually. So it was actually December 31st. So I guess it would basically be 2014.
And why are you selling it?
Well, two reasons. One, because we need some money to help my daughter in college. And two, even with the two homes and the amount of money that I make, my wife has health problems and can't work, but the amount of money that I make, it's a struggle just to keep up with property taxes. In fact, we're behind on property taxes. Not in collections on them or anything, but we are behind.
Got it.
And what's this home going to sell for?
We just spoke with the real estate agent, and they're going to list it for $279 and figure, you know, right in that range.
What was it worth when you bought it?
Or when you inherited it?
Inherited it.
Well, we are getting, we're in the process of getting comps, I guess you would call it, from that date. And I'm guessing probably a little over $200,000.
That would be my guess, is right around $200,000.
Yeah, so you're going to have capital gain tax.
Have you put any anything
Correct.
Into the house?
No.
Okay. So tell us about your daughter's education. How much will it cost?
Well, she
whatever
is,
it is more than your budget.
Exactly. The first thing she's doing is what they call a gap year. She's actually going to it's a Christian organization at Hume Lake down in the Kings Canyon.
Okay.
And they do missions trips and that sort of thing, but they also earn
how much will the gap
credit.
I've actually been to Hume. I was a camp counselor for the fifth grade wagon train camp.
Is Hume,
oh, that's
is Hume
awesome.
Lake.
My son works there now. My son works at Hume Lake now.
That's good. I think it's a young man's job. 1 week was enough for me.
How long ago was this, Scott?
when my son was in fifth grade. He's in
like 10 years ago or
yeah, whatever. Yeah, long time ago.
How much would this gap year at Hume Lake cost you?
It's about $15,000.
Okay, and then tell me about the education.
How does that cost you if she's working there?
She doesn't work there. They live there and go to school. My son works there. I'm sorry.
Got it.
Okay, so your daughter's gap year is $15,000. What's the rest of the education cost?
Where she goes after that, you mean?
Yeah. Like what college? Okay, is she going to community college? Yeah. Is she going to go to 4-year? Is she going to go to Stanford?
She'll probably do like Sac State or something. I don't know if that's totally decided yet. She's got a year to figure that out, I guess. And she knows she wants to be a special needs teacher. So, yeah.
The home's going to sell for $279. You're going to pay some real estate costs on it. You can pay some taxes. So let's say you're left with 2.25 when it's done, maybe right around there, give or take.
Yeah.
How much of this two-quarter do you want to allocate towards your daughter's year at gap year and education?
That was actually what I was trying to get to, but Scott asked it in a much more eloquent manner.
Well, beyond the gap year, I don't really have it have a plan for that yet. The gap year itself, everything is paid for within that $15,000.
So let's put $100,000 aside for that.
Well, yeah. Well, here's what I think is really important. Is that you and your wife come up with some budget amount of this that you'll allocate towards your daughter's education? Because she could do it pretty inexpensively. She can finish this up, live at home, go to community college or go to a state college, and do it relatively inexpensive.
I've seen people that do it for $500,000. I've seen people that do the whole thing for less than $50,000.
Correct.
Yeah, we're definitely looking for the budget side of it.
Well, so then here's what we've also seen. Is people with is you have one just one child? No, you have a son who's already old. So you don't have any other younger kids after this?
No, okay. Just the two.
So, but we've also seen where people end up blowing through quite a bit of their assets to help educate a child to the detriment of their own financial security. So,
That's
why we would think it'd be really important to really kind of map that out and then have a good conversation with your daughter. Like, look. Well, here's the money for that gap year, which is quite a luxury. And here's the additional dollars we're going to provide for your education. The rest you're going to have to kind of figure out. And so you're going to have to prioritize yourself about what you want to do for your.
So your question was, what should I do with the proceeds, this $225,000?
And the reason we're asking these questions
is we have no idea what to do with them if you don't know what to do with them. So unless
I want to be able to invest it and then, you know, have some money set aside for retirement. I've been self-employed and everything else.
Okay.
And I'm, you know, work with my hands and have not had a chance. At least I say I haven't had a chance. Obviously, somebody will tell you there's always a chance. But through when I was self-employed, you know, the good years, you put money away to, and then end up using it for the bad years.
Are you still self-employed?
So, no, I am not.
Okay. Do you have a company 401k available to you or 403b or 457?
Nope.
Okay. So here's what I would do. Try to figure out what your child is going to cost, what this is going to cost for this next 4 or 5 years, and then set that aside. I would put that in a savings account.
Yeah.
I wouldn't invest.
Or a money market account, real conservative.
So wouldn't invest a dollar of it, right? Then I'd probably take another $20,000 and I would put that aside as an emergency fund. Then I would take the rest of it and I would buy a balanced portfolio. And I would manage it as if you were going to retire with these dollars. That is how I would manage the money. So let's just go through the numbers. If it's $225,000, we'd end up with approximately $150,000 to invest towards your retirement.
Okay.
Depending on how much money they allocate towards their daughter, which really is a really important question that you need to ask. Because otherwise that number
is going to change, but you're going to have to stick an allocation. So I would do that. So it's ultimately, if the education costs $50,000 or $75,000, you're going to put some money in reserves. You're going to have $125,000 to $150,000 to invest. Doing that math. Mm-hmm. I'd put a balanced portfolio together. I would invest it all, and I would transfer the appropriate amount every year over into a Roth IRA for both you and your spouse.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. And I would use the money in that balanced account in order to move it over every year. A good advisor should be able to do that for you in a relatively simple manner.
Gotcha.
If they don't make that recommendation to put the money into a Roth IRA. Don't talk to them anymore. Wait for them to bring it up. Don't bring it up yourself.
Okay.
You're doing a little test with an advisor. You're going to invest the dollars. It's going to go up and down in value. And you're not going to worry about it, right? You're just going to let it go, because you'll probably work until the age of 65 or 70. And you'll be fine. The mere fact that your home is paid for was a blessing. The mere fact that you inherited these two properties, both being paid for, and you could get a child educated and on their way in life is a blessing. That is exactly what I would do. Scott, you want to add to that at all?
100% agree with you.
Yeah, and I'd be a little bit
maybe
on the more aggressive side.
Yeah, maybe more aggressive than
a balanced portfolio. A little bit, but I don't know Mike and his history, and so I would have a tendency to go into this a little bit more conservative than I might otherwise, but...
And I think what's important is that you treat these dollars as sacred dollars.
You don't have them.
Yeah. Right. So Pat mentioned setting up an emergency. That's the emergency. But otherwise, these dollars are for the day when maybe Mike's got a health issue and can't work.
You don't own these.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You don't own these. How do you treat your retirement dollars, Scott?
Well, I usually rate them when I want to go on a vacation or something.
Would never even dream of touching my retirement dollars until retirement.
So, sure.
Yeah. All righty.
How do you guys feel about gold and silver?
I hate them. Don't like it at all.
Okay.
I think it's terrible investments. I think they're awful.
Yeah.
And you go over a long period of time, have been terrible.
And yeah, it's not me that just says this.
Go over a long
history.
Period of time.
It doesn't produce anything. Right.
Gotcha.
And I hate it even more when I have to purchase it for other people in the form of jewelry. And by the way, it's not an investment.
Yeah.
All righty.
All right.
And
all
stay away from the Bitcoin. You bring up gold, and the next question is the Bitcoin.
No.
The Bitcoin, not Bitcoin. Bitcoin.
Actually, you're a little old to bring up Bitcoin.
Yeah.
All righty.
All right, Mike.
All righty. Well,
appreciate
thank you, guys.
The call.
All right. Thanks. You know, Pat, this call just kind of reminded me, it's a lot of people are planning their kids' college times right now, right?
Yeah.
A lot of these bills, I think, come due in the middle of summer, kids sending kids off to college.
It can be expensive. It can be expensive.
Just don't let your kids' college expenses derail your life.
There is nothing. So I spent some time with two friends of mine that are junior. They're vice principals at high schools. And we talked about the cost of education.
Yes.
And they both said, understanding that community college is an absolute great alternative to keep the overall cost of college down.
That's the route I took. I didn't have a lot of, well, truth be told, in high school I was a bit of a...
you weren't the best student?
No. I didn't turn in my homework because it was a little rebellious thing. I don't know what it was. But I didn't have very good grades. So not bad grades, just not good grades. So junior college was kind of my only option for to get me through. And then I went to Chico State, right?
Yeah.
Then I'm a certified financial planner and actually does on the dean's list.
At some point in time, you caught on.
Correct. All right.
But some point in time, you figured it out.
And a few years back, I did one of those executive courses at Harvard. You're there for a week. And I had a blast. I remember at the time thinking, man, I should have applied myself a little more. I probably would have really enjoyed this. But then I thought, well...
You can barely get into community college. You can't rewrite the past.
That's to your point, yes, it's exactly right. But look, after your first couple of years in the marketplace, your formal education's almost irrelevant.
Yeah.
It's what you can accomplish in the marketplace. That's what's going to make the difference.
The child graduates, not the school. The child graduates. It's what the child looks like when they come out of the college. Not always the school they went to. That's why it's important that the child graduates. So the emphasis constantly on the school and the fact that maybe the school costs more money or does this or does that isn't nearly as much as actually the child applying themselves in the school that they go to.
Totally agree with
that. The most important thing. The most important thing.
And you don't want to have your kids saddled with tens of thousands of dollars of student debt.
Nor do you want to sacrifice your retirement.
Nope.
So that
nope.
Your kid could get, you know, a psychology degree, and when they graduate, none of the big psychology companies are hiring.
Yeah, and It's a luxury going away to school, living in the dorms and all that.
Yeah, it is.
Tremendous luxury.
Yeah. We see it. I see it. We see it with clients. And because I have four children of either just out of college.
Or going in.
Or going in or in college. I see it. I see it all the time. So keep that in mind.
1-888-2-HANSEN to join the program. We're taking a quick break. Stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Are you a sports fan? Each year, teams spend the preseason getting ready for their big opening game. Well, retirement's a little like that. The difference is that instead of a yearly preseason, you spend your career getting your finances in shape for a retirement that could last 25 years or more. Think of Hanson McLean as the coach that gets you ready for your retirement season. For a free retirement readiness consultation, visit us at HansonMcLean.com today.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean. To join our show, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Love to take your call. Let's go to Santa Cruz. Talk with Mark. Mark, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Mark.
How are you?
We're great.
Good. What I'm wondering is, in my rocket science days here, I decided to compare. I've got some rental houses, and I decided to compare those versus a 401k. Just to see how much I'd have to have in a 401k to equal what I have in my what I will have in my rental houses.
Okay.
Because they're not paid off yet. So okay. what I did is I took $1,500 a month times four houses times, which is $6,000, times 12 months, which is 72,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I compared that to a 4% withdrawal rate, which is typical for 401ks from what I know. And I got this is where I was floored when I got this.
Mm-hmm.
$1.8 million.
Uh-huh. $1.8 million. Uh-huh.
I mean, my wife's doing okay on a 401k, doing actually what I just didn't really
know. Well, you, but
nowhere near that.
You're 4%. But you took an arbitrary number. You took a number that one would argue on a rental as well, frankly, a 4% withdrawal rate of all your assets. That doesn't, if your 401k was somewhat aggressively invested, you could expect, say, a 7 or 8% long-term return.
And what's the value of the rental properties?
Ballpark, 350-ish, 370,000 right in there.
And you think you're going to get $72,000 a year in income off of rental properties that are worth less than $400,000.
Let me tell you, I am getting that, and that $70,000 a year is after taxes and insurance.
I don't believe it. I'm just telling you.
So you're saying you're getting a $6,000 a month rent off a property that sells for $300,000+?
Yes.
Where?
Elk Grove.
You buy a property for $300,000.
No.
370.
Well,
let's round it up to 400,000.
It's 100,000 a door,
right? So 100 grand a door. That's an 18% return
net.
That's after paying for.
We'll just say we don't need to go through the numbers. If you can do it, then do that, and don't do your 401k.
Yeah.
If in fact you can buy four properties that after expenses net you $1,500 a month for $100,000, avoid your 401k, avoid any financial advisors, do that all day long.
I don't believe it.
Really?
Yeah.
But
let's step back for a second, Mark. Do you have leverage on these properties? Did you take a loan against
them? Yes.
All right. Well, so there's two different things that we're talking about, right? The most you can lose in your 401k is the money in your 401k. The most you can lose in a rental property is the money you put in and the money you borrowed.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Although you're talking about losing everything.
What do you think happened? Wait. Slow. This is not a hypothetical I'm discussing, because I bought rental properties for people like yourself after the last downturn. More than a couple. I didn't buy them before, but I did buy them after. What was the mistake they made? They used leverage. They had a renter in there. The renter either moved out or the payments went up and they couldn't afford to make the payment on the house. And where did the, what happened to the home?
Yeah.
I bought it from the bank. That's what happened
right,
to the home.
I bought my houses when the market was down as well.
Okay. But the point being is that comparison, if you in fact have properties that are worth $400,000 that generate $72,000.
What you said, for $400,000, someone can go and buy, and after expenses,
that's
$6,000 a month.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It's an 18% annualized return. Do it all day.
All day long.
All day long.
Yep.
It's not the same as your 401k, though.
All day long.
It's not the same as your 401k because you've used leverage. If you want to compare apples to apples, you pay cash for those houses, and then you do the math there.
We're working on the cash, but
he's telling us he can, for $100,000 a door, net
$18,000 a year. That's what he said. I don't believe it.
Net. Well, that's what I'm saying. But he says he can, so then
let him go.
Good. We wish you well, Mark. Good luck in your endeavors. Let's continue on with calls. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number here. We're going to talk with Robert. Robert, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for joining us, Robert.
Thank you. I'm considering selling my primary residence to move to a slightly different part of town, maybe a little bit better neighborhood. So my situation is 50 years old, have $300,000 in a 401k, no debts other than a mortgage, which I currently owe $230 on. I purchased the house for $275 25 months ago, and my realtor says we can sell it now for $385 or more. So what's your advice, sell or stay in the house?
Do you want it?
When did you buy it? How long ago?
Said a year and a half. Or did you say
25 months? Yeah, 25 months ago.
Okay, so it's been your primary residence two of the last 5 years.
And what's your income?
$115,000 per year.
And so, are you married?
Yes.
What's your question for us?
Should he stay or should he go?
So the question: should I sell the house
and go where?
No, and maybe rent for a couple year or two.
Or just stay
in the house.
Got it.
Yeah. So here's the challenge, right? If we had a crystal ball that would tell us when home prices are going to decline, there's no question that great advice would be sell the house right before the decline, rent during the decline, repurchase at the bottom of the decline. Unfortunately, we don't have a crystal ball, nor does anybody else.
And it's your primary residence. So what you should be thinking is, do you like living there? Do you like the house? Do you like the neighborhood?
We need to expand. It's getting a little bit small for the size of the family. So, I mean, we can make it work, but, we'd like to be a little more comfortable.
All right. Well, that's a completely different question. So if you can, it looks like you can afford a more expensive home.
The downside, the danger, if you sell and rent somewhere, let's say you sell and you rent slightly, a home that, better fits your needs, and you're renting. What happens if home prices continue to climb the next 5 years?
You're priced out of the market. So we don't recommend that you take a strategy of renting. But if you want to buy a bigger home, a more expensive home, you probably can afford it
Rates are certainly low.
Based upon the numbers that you've shared with us already. If you did that, I'd get a 15-year mortgage on it, you would add more to what you owe. Does your wife work outside of the home?
No,
she doesn't.
How old are the kids?
I'm the sole breadwinner.
How old are the kids?
Kids are 5 and 8.
How big is the house you're in now?
1,800 square feet.
Yeah, you could probably afford
I would probably do a 30-year mortgage.
Would you?
Just thinking, you think it's expensive now.
But you could afford a more expensive home if you so desired and get a 30-year mortgage.
It's probably not, if you do that, just figure you're probably going to work a couple more years.
That's right. That is right.
Which might not, it might be the right decision still.
Yeah.
I mean, you've done good to get, you know, a few hundred thousand saved for retirement. But
don't sell and move to a rental. If you want to do that, you can actually buy some put options on some traded REITs that will achieve the same effect.
That's right. Without
which, I'm not recommending that you buy put options on traded REITs, but it would
residential REITs.
Yeah, but it would have the same effect.
Or without, some home builders, you can do the same.
You
thing.
Can do you put options on home builders. So there's lots of ways you can play the residential real estate market without actually moving your family.
Appreciate the call, Robert. We had got to take a quick break here for the bottom of the hour, unfortunately. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the difference it might mean by working just a little bit longer.
Not a lot longer, just
like
a little.
Maybe even 6 months or a year and postponing retirement and what that could do. If you can't afford to save more now, how that might be a great solution for you. So we'll talk about that. And, of course, we'll continue on with calls and to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. This is Hanson McLean. We'll be right back.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean, thanks for joining us in our second half hour.
That's right. So there was a study recently done that New York Times had published on. It was actually kind of interesting. Well, if it wasn't, I wouldn't be talking about. But it shows the just by working a little bit longer, delaying retirement for just a few months even could have an impact. So they did some studies saying.
Wait, I saw this article. I read about a third of it. And then.
And then
read the rest of it. And you actually printed it out.
Pat found no value in the article. Or like most articles, all the information's in the first third.
I questioned the credibility of the article based upon the timing of that.
The timing of what?
The timing of when this happens. And the fact that it naturally makes sense the longer you work. The better your retirement savings because you're postponing, let me guess, Social Security, a pension benefit. You're allowing your dollars to actually work longer and you're depositing more. Was that the gist of the article?
Yes.
And so what your point being is that if you work 6 months longer, it's better?
Mathematically, here, check this out.
Okay.
All right. You're 56. You want to retire in 10 years at 66. You run the numbers. You realize you need to save an extra 1% of your income.
Okay.
You're like, dang, that's going to impact some things I want to do, that extra 1%.
Okay.
You're saving another 1%. So if you don't save that extra. Instead, you work an additional 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
6 weeks.
And 10 years.
That additional 6 weeks. This is from The Power of Working Longer. It says right here, it's eye-opening. That's according to Jeff Sommer.
But 6 weeks is a percentage of 10 years is how long?
Well, you can do the numbers like I can. What kind of question is that? It's irrelevant. The point, okay. Never mind that.
There's 500.
If you want to.
Listen, Scott. So listen, no, you're not getting off this easy. There's 520 weeks
yes,
in a 10-year period.
That. Yes, 10 times 52. Thank
right?
you for that.
You work math. 6 weeks. You work 1.1% longer. It's going to improve your retirement by how much?
Well, it's the difference of. I can run the numbers. So.
Let's just suffice it.
My point was this.
Okay.
You're 56 or whatever. You're planning on retiring. You're feeling guilty because you can't quite get to that extra saving place you need to be.
Assuming that you're 56 and you've gone through a formal retirement plan.
If you push out your retirement, it doesn't have to be years.
No, correct. It could be 6 months.
Correct.
6 weeks, I don't think is going to move the
needle.
Well,
okay, because the market value fluctuations.
Right?
I understand that.
But 6 months or a year will. But what I found ludicrous is, okay, our listening audience is average age, what age? 58?
I don't know. That's our typical new client. I think
average
probably younger than that.
Probably 50. I ask every one of those 55-year-olds driving around or listening to the, how many of you have done a formal projection of your retirement savings if you're 55 of what it will look like when you're 65?
And when you say formal, do you mean going online and doing a little calculator?
Correct. Or doing some analysis of some sort.
Sitting with a financial advisor and looking at everything.
I will take either.
Okay.
Because I believe that the number is a percentage is so small. I bet it's less than 10% of the people in the age of 55 have actually done an analysis.
All right,
and
let's say those that are 55 that have been savers, that have money in their 401k.
They probably don't need to worry about retiring, working another 6 weeks, right?
This is why we have before the show, we usually get together and talk about what we want to discuss, and I just kind of pull that out of a stack. So, 1-888-2-HANSEN if you want to be
again,
a part of the program.
I'm right.
Sometimes I have to let Pat feel good about himself by talking down to me. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to join us. And I think we'll just stick mostly to calls.
Let's do that.
Because this ain't working for me.
We could get along.
Let's talk to Blair in Northern California. Blair, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Blair.
Hi, Scott and Pat. Hey, you know, I listened to your show the other day. And it was the first time I ever listened to it. It sounded really interesting.
Thank you. It's only been 23 years, so glad you finally found us.
Well, I was waiting for my wife in the car in front of Safeway, and I was listening to the radio, and you guys popped on.
She was in there buying the signature brand.
There you go.
What can we do for you?
So, I have my situation is really not very normal, and I was curious what you would recommend for my wife and I.
Okay.
I'm turning 67, and my wife is 62, and we've been married for 40 years. We have no children, and we quit working when I was 43 and when my wife was 39. At that time, we were worth $1.6 million and have not had a job since. I'm in excellent health, and my wife has some issues, but nothing serious at this point. We never made big wages on the job, and we always lived on less than what we made. We never had 401ks or IRAs or any of that stuff. As far as our current situation, we're currently living on $60,000 a year, and we have no debts. Our combined annual income for my retirement and our Social Security, we're both collecting Social Security, is $32,900. I currently have $180,000 in savings and $300,000 in CDs, and around 1.75 in stocks. My house, according to Zillow, is worth 1.1. My wife wants me to sell all of her stock account at its top value, the value it hit top. And she said she'd be happy if I sold at least half and put the money into CDs. So
well, when's the top?
Sure.
How do we know when the top is?
Well, basically, we know what the top is as far as what our accounts hit.
Got it. It's the highest that your account's ever been. So you're
but you've seen those over you've been retired for 24 years. You've seen a lot of those highs.
Yeah, I have.
Okay, so you're.
So what's your question?
Scott, before we get there, the stock account's worth $1.75 million, and you had $480,000 in other instruments, mostly fixed income of some sort, bank CDs. But I got confused when you said your income was $32,900 a year and you need to live on $60,000.
I'm going to back up even further. When you started this conversation, you said this we're an unusual couple. I'm thinking, I've heard it all. And then as you're going through this, I thought, this is unusual.
This is unusual.
I got to tell you.
This really is. So when you said you're unusual. So you said you live on $60,000 a year, but the income was approximately $33,000.
That's basically what our Social Security and our pension. Retirement. Basically what I do is I take from my savings, I take from my stock account to make up the difference.
Okay. And so...
That's how I come up.
So basically, you need to make up about $30,000 a year out of a capital base of $2.2 million, which is a 1.5% distribution rate.
Practically the dividends.
So your wife wants you to sell the stock, and the reason for it would be.
Well, she feels insecure because she's seen the account go up, she's seen it go down, and right now it's at an all-time high after Trump. Trump's been really good for our account. Everybody's account for that matter. And so anyway, she'd like me to get out while the getting's good.
And what do you think you should do?
Well, you know, she said she'd be happy if I sold half. I have mixed feelings. I feel like, you know, we have never lived high on the hog. I kind of feel like if we got out, we would have enough to cover our living expenses, medical expenses, whatever, for the rest of our life. So it's kind of like if I got out, I'd know for sure that I'd never have to worry.
Mm-hmm. So, Blair, that is correct.
I don't think you need to worry if you stay in.
But the point being is that you've got this $480,000 and $1.75 million in equities, that you've got $2.25 million of investable assets.
My first thought is you retired at age 43 and have managed to stay retired over that time and have grown your asset base.
And married.
Don't change. Whatever.
So I'm going to disagree with you a little bit there. I don't think I don't think it's an issue to pull back the equities a little bit.
It's not an issue.
Right? That's my point. I wouldn't pull back 50%.
No, I wouldn't either.
I wouldn't pull back 50%. But I most certainly, so I look at these things as this $2.25 million, right? And there's a fine line. It's like, well, I know intellectually that
CD and savings, he can go 10 to 15 years on supplementing his
income.
We're
talking about what his wife wants. We're not talking about what he wants, right?
It's a little bit of both.
Okay.
We've been married 40 years. Yeah, you know, we both gotta agree.
So we won't know the right answer until the future, right?
I don't think there's anything wrong with pulling back a third of that equity position.
Some of it.
Some of it. 25 to 30%. Now, the problem you're going to have, are they individual equities or are they mutual funds?
No, they're not mutual. They're individual stocks.
Okay. So the problem that you probably have a lot of embedded gains in those stocks, I imagine.
I hate to say it.
I've been taking a little each year. What I've been doing is I've been playing kind of a game. You know, it goes up, but I look at what the taxable levels are. And then what I do is I'll sell enough so that I don't have a large tax gain, and then I'll put it right back in.
Okay, I'd be comfortable pulling $200,000 or $300,000
in equity. Less.
Yeah,
here's what you could do. You could say, let's get to so equities are no more than 50% of our overall savings.
Okay.
Because that way, when you had your CDs and your savings, and if you kind of said, look, we can just have these dollars buried in the mattress and pull a dollar. That extra $30,000 a year out, and it's going to last us the rest of our life.
If you were a pension fund, you'd be approximately 60% equities and 40% bonds and cash.
What we don't want to ignore is there could be a time of high inflation in the future.
It's not going to affect him as much as it would someone much younger, Scott.
I'm giving him some arguments to keep stock.
I don't mean to be as argumentative today as normally, but it's been your behavior lately. So. Yeah, I agree with you. If you brought it to 50-50 or 60-40, that is completely...
Either way, it's not going to...
It's not going to matter.
One argument to keep stock is for inflation. And if there ever is hyperinflation...
You're going to be glad you owned it.
Yeah. Good luck, Blair. Appreciate the call. It was a different situation.
Yeah. Unusual.
Let's continue. 1-888-2-Hanson's the number. Let's talk to Dan in Alameda.
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh,
hey, Dan.
No problem.
I was enjoying the banter there that you had there.
Thank you. Do you want to share a story about one of your children?
Well, yeah, I got all adult children, and you know they enjoy doing pretty much the same thing, you know, outdoors and hiking and all that kind of good stuff.
That's
a good thing. It's a good thing.
What can we do for you regarding finances?
Here's my question to you guys, and you know, I'm 62 years old, considering perhaps throwing in the towel after many years of working with my employer, and got a 401 that's sitting pretty, I should say, getting close to the goal that I want it to be, and trying to figure out, you know, once I reach it, what should I do with it? Where should I put it? Where can I safely secure it?
Dan, are you thinking 62 is your plan? Are you planning on retiring, or are you just thinking this is a good time to exit your one job and do something different?
I'm thinking of exiting and perhaps doing something in the near future, but I'd like to, you know, take a sort of a sabbatical, so to say, and figure it out.
Dan, were you receiving the monthly pension?
I have a pension that was frozen about maybe 15 years ago.
Okay, and how much would that be approximately?
You know, right now it's roughly about I think if once they start dipping into it, probably about $800 or so. So it's not huge.
And you will not start Social Security, I take it.
Correct. I plan not to touch anything until I reach that retirement age, and hoping I can figure out what to do with this 401. Either just
so. Do you plan on the reason we're asking these questions is because this is all pertinent to what you'll do with your 401k.
So do you plan on taking income from the 401k?
I hope not to.
Okay, so what are you going to live on?
Well, my wife's going to continue working.
Perfect.
And, we've got pretty much all of the home matters taken care of.
So you pretty much have no debt, and wife will continue to work for a period of time. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct.
And if you can get the wife to continue to work indefinitely,
ever,
then you get a lot of freedom.
That would be nice. I could climb a lot of money.
Nice. Not only do you have the financial independence, but you have all that independence through 9 to 5 as well.
Will your wife be receiving a monthly pension when she retires?
Just the Social Security.
Got it. And how much does she have in her 401k?
Zip.
Okay.
Zero.
So there's going to be a period of years where you're going to invest this for growth. What I'm hearing, and then you're going to turn it into a stream of income.
Correct.
Here's what I would do is I would roll it into an IRA.
Okay.
If you want professional management, your 401k may be appropriate. It's probably I'm hoping a low cost 401k. Some of them are low cost, some of them are not low cost. But if you want professional management, which is to direct these dollars, give you professional advice on an ongoing basis, then you need to move it to an IRA and hire an RIA for your IRA. So the thing to remember in this is that the biggest there's two costs. When I talk about your costs in your 401k, there's always two costs associated with a portfolio. Always two costs associated with a portfolio. The first cost is the cost of the portfolio itself. So it's the internal fees of the mutual fund. The cheapest way to do it is actually to do it yourself, which is to go out and open an account at a discount broker and buy those appropriate mutual funds.
Or the individual shares, for that matter, be even less expensive.
If you're comfortable doing so. The other way is to hire a registered investment advisor and do that. And they will charge anywhere between 0.75% to 1.5% on average across the board. But the cost, that's one of the costs. The biggest cost you should be concerned about is what's called the cost of risk, which is how much risk does this portfolio have? So let me give you an example. If I build a portfolio at Hanson McLean, right? If I build a portfolio at Hanson McLean, I want to have less downside risk and more upside gain. So a well-constructed portfolio will participate in, let's say, 50% of the upside in the market and 25% on the downside. There's no such thing as a portfolio that will give you 100% of the upside and 0% of the downside. That's the unicorn portfolio. It doesn't exist. So people have a tendency to actually just look at the cost of the pure cost. How much money does it cost me to invest the dollars? But the cost of risk is what derails retirements. The cost of how much of the downside am I have? So when you meet with an advisor, you want to see some sort of modeling or portfolio modeling that will actually show what the downside risk will be as well as the upside gain. And that's predictive modeling.
And at this stage in your life, that is really important because the cost, just the management fees, that's one piece. I've never seen anyone's retirement been derailed by management fees. But I've certainly seen people's retirement been derailed by too much risk. And there blows up when something goes south.
And you see it in the press all the time. Cost, cost, cost. Listen, we agree. Costs need to be low. Costs need to be low. We think that that is important. But the biggest thing you worry about, the thing that keeps me up at night worrying about my clients is, listen, how much downside risk is there? Downside risk.
What happens if we have another financial crisis, which will look different than last
one? So whoever you choose, you want them to show you some modeling, which is this is how this portfolio will predictively react in these types of markets.
And continuing on at Hanson McLean, 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of the program. Let's go to Colorado and talk with Steve. Steve, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, Scott and Pat. Enjoy your show very much.
Thank you, sir.
My father is 102 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
He'll be 103 in April and actually very good health. And he inherited some land from my mother, who died about 12 years ago, some farmland in Kansas, about $400,000 that he has sold and will close here in about a month. And he called me and asked for some advice. He wants to take about $100,000 out and put in his bank account, and then he wants to know what he can do with the other $300,000 that'll draw some interest.
And so he's saving this money for his golden years?
Well, actually,
that is
he
funny.
Is, because his golf score is about 102.
Is that? But that's,
wow.
That's actually better than mine.
Pretty incredible.
Let me ask you this. So he inherited the property.
What was the value of that particular piece of land when he inherited it 12 years ago?
Yeah, that's a good question. The cost basis has actually gone down. It was worth more 12 years ago than it is today.
Yeah, because if the cost basis was up, we probably would have suggested some sort of installment sale on a portion.
And what?
Because there's a step up in basis upon someone's death. But
And what is your father's overall net worth, you think, including whatever land he's got left?
You know, probably $600,000-$700,000.
Okay.
So this is actually a pretty interesting situation. This is the kind of thing I would love to hear five different qualified financial advisors give their kind of opinion on this, because there's so many different ways you can take this. But kind of at the core, investments are based on two main. Well, first of all, if you believe that you don't have a crystal ball. If you believe you have a crystal ball, then you go out and find whatever is the hot investment that's going to make you the most amount of money in the shortest period of time with the least amount of risk, right? But if you're at the point think, I don't think that's possible, you want to do something passive as opposed to instead of trying to develop some piece of commercial real estate or something along those lines. So investments really come down to two things. One is risk tolerance. How much up and down in the value of an investment can you stomach? And the second is, how much time do you have before you need your principal? Those two things are kind of at the core, and we move out from there. So as investment advisor, just about any investment advisor would look at those two things first of all. What's the kind of risk tolerance? How much ups and downs can someone stomach? Second, when are the dollars needed?
And so your father's timeline may be inconsequential in this because it's your timeline. If he doesn't think he's ever going to spend the money, maybe he's investing it for you your brothers and sisters.
Yeah, so the big question really is,
where's the money going to land?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of his concerns, is not only if he would need this $300,000 for an emergency, plus he wants that to go into his estate when he does die.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to have it be tied up for years where the estate can't get hold of it. So I know that's one of his concerns.
Got it. That won't be an issue as long as he has a living trust, which I assume that he has some legal documents too.
And you say his health is great.
Well, let's say it's very good for a 102-year-old man. You know, you talk to him on the phone, and he would never know that he's on.
That's amazing.
And, Steve, has he ever invested in something that prices on a daily basis, like stocks or bonds?
Yes, he has, and I think he's kind of got burned in the stock market. He's a little leery of the stock market right now.
Yeah. So
the question really
that's
is—
That's the driver. That's the driver is how he's going to react.
Yeah, because as soon as you move out of— let's say bank investments, CDs. As soon as you move out of that, there is some degree of risk. And whatever you invest in, things will move up and down in value. He can take the money out and go invest in U.S. government bonds.
They will go up and down in value.
They will go up and down in value. So
if it was my dad.
Well, the interesting thing, he doesn't really have a need for yield.
Yeah, but why put him through any pain with market volatility or fluctuations? Why not just put it all in the bank?
Well, that's a good.
If it were my dad, that's what I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of what I'd
say. Let's split it between a couple banks.
If I was so lucky to have a father that had that kind of money, I'm joking. I would put it in the bank because what's the outcome? The worst thing you can do is say, "Hey, Dad, put it in this great investment," and then a month from now, if it loses 5% of its value and he doesn't stay with it, what for? And why put him through any sort of pain whatsoever? He's probably not going to spend it in his lifetime. I'd bring him down to the local bank, someone he's banked with for years. I wouldn't let him talk to the financial advisor that sits in a corner. They'll try to sell him a fixed index annuity
if you can buy an annuity at 102 years old.
Oh, I'm sure you can.
You think there's someone that would manufacture that?
Yes.
And but, I would just put it in a bank CD, and I'd talk to the branch manager, and whatever they said they were going to give you as interest, I'd ask for a higher number.
And if your dad had said something like, look, I definitely want to do something beyond bank CDs. If he says, Steve, I know I'm 102, but I'd love to try something different. It would really be something of a well-balanced, diversified portfolio where you might have 30% exposed to the stock market, the rest in some conservative funds, mostly no-load mutual funds, but you'd be paying some sort of management fee to have someone manage that for you, and it would fluctuate in value. Is there a good chance that 5 years down the road you would have more money in that type of strategy than in the bank? Absolutely. But
I think that's good advice.
Yeah, Steve, I wouldn't mess with it. I wouldn't mess with it.
I understand. I agree.
Yeah, so, I would do the same thing if it was my dad, Steve.
102.
That's awesome.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Enjoy.
I appreciate the call.
Glad you called. We assume he's a good guy.
So we have the clients of the firm, and the advisor was telling me that works with them. They were in their 90s. They became clients in their 90s, and so the advisor asked the clients, What are your objectives with these monies? And she answered with a straight face, we're saving them for our golden years.
How old was she?
90.
Well, that's all the time we have in today's program, unfortunately. You can always find us at HanselMcLane.com. Go to our learning library. There's all kinds of great digital guides. A couple thousand people have downloaded our guides this year alone, and there's some good stuff there. HanselMcLane.com, learning library. We're out of time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. This has been Hansel McLane's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLane Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.
What matters most to you? Probably family and friends, but what else? When you're in your 20s, it's one thing. Your 30s and 40s, another. When your 50s creep in, you're older and wiser, but the sand in the hourglass of your asset accumulation stage has shifted. Right now, you're listening to Scott Hansen and Pat McLane. Sure, they've been hosting Money Matters for 20 years, but they've been CEOs of Hansen McLane Advisors for longer than that. If you're over 50 and you've been saving for retirement, you're probably wondering how your preparation stacks up. Here's what you should do. Go to HansonMcLane.com and either schedule a free consultation with one of our credentialed advisors, or if you're not quite ready for that, maybe take a look at some of the helpful materials in our learning library. You'll see tutorials, podcasts, and articles on things like Social Security, retirement planning, investments, and a whole slew of other things that can help you retire well. Over 50 and starting to see retirement up ahead? Make sure you do it right. We can help. Go to HansonMcLane.com today.